Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, thank you very much for the introduction here on a Friday in May. It is indeed time to join up with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am fine. I saw pictures of you. You were out partying last night for the Brooklyn Bridge.
Brooklyn Bridge. I remember the 100th anniversary. Now I've been to the 125th as well. And the question is, will you be joining me for the 150th?
God willing, you and I will both be there, along with a lot of New Yorkers.
Let us all hope.
Let us all hope so, indeed. Let me ask you the question that was in the newscast. Any interest in being vice president?
I have a job which I've said I have 587 days left, but who's counting? And I will continue in that job. I just hope that this country has the great alternatives. You need two good presidential candidates for the general election, and also you want to make sure that whoever the two candidates pick, those people could be president of the United States. Sadly, you know, we've had great tragedies of presidents assassinated or dying, and you want to make sure that the number two guy is picked not because of how he can deliver electoral votes, and well, I don't think they really ever deliver any, but whether or not they could be president, the future of the free world depends on it. Not sure that whoever these guys are, they will pick somebody very competent. In terms of myself, you know, I have a job.
All right. But you view that position as really not so much contributing from a policy point of view, but again, making sure that the office is covered if necessary.
No, I think it's from a policy point of view as well. You don't want a vice president whose only job is to sit there and wait in case the president can't serve. What you want is somebody who can really contribute. After all, they are, in theory, the number two person in the government. And some presidents have and listened to their vice president and given them a lot to do, and some have barely talked to them. There's a natural tension between the staffs, but that's true in government, and that's what the president's job is to make sure that doesn't get in the way. And to use the vice president. Vice presidents can represent the president. They are, if they are capable of serving as president, then they have ideas that you certainly want to consult with and learn. The president's got the ultimate responsibility. But, you know, John, you don't run any big organization by making all the decisions yourself. And even when you disagree, sometimes you let those people who work for you make the decisions, because if they don't get the authority to make decisions, you can't attract good people. But I think typically what is done, at least the press tells me it's done this way, is the presidential candidates look to see who can help them get elected. And I think if you really look at the numbers, there's no evidence of vice presidential candidates delivering electoral votes or even popular votes. Vice presidential candidates, it seems to me, you should look to see if the president can't serve, is this somebody that I think can run the country?
All right. When you breakfast with Mr. McCain, did the subject come up?
We did not discuss who he was going to pick. He said that he had that was one of his great challenges, was to find somebody. He certainly we didn't talk about anything else in terms of the vice president. It was just part of the list of things that he had to do. You know, John McCain and his family are great Americans. They've contributed an enormous amount to our country. I was honored to have him campaign for me back in 2001. Somebody had introduced us, and he came up, and we walked the streets of Brooklyn. And I think he will be a great candidate. And I think on the Democratic side, whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, both of those have represent, you know, all three of these people have a very different, bring something very different to the party. And I think that's very healthy for our system. And the public is going to have a chance to choose between two of them. And I assume we'll find out which two pretty soon.
I would hope so, right?
Well, it could go until the convention. It's possible. But regardless, and I don't want to get involved in any of the politics of it, but I've just always thought the country needs to have a choice. Yeah, they have to understand the choice as to what each would do if they were elected. And you can't ask them specifically on a given topic necessarily what you would do and want to get the answer you want. You want to get the answer that is an answer that is intelligent, that is well thought out, that is doable, and say, okay, when this person is president, there'll be other things that come up, things we haven't talked about now, things we don't know now are going to come up, and will they have the intellectual capacity to face the issues, to marshal the facts? Will I have the courage and stomach to make tough decisions? That's what being a leader is all about. And the President of the United States is not just the President of the country, because we're the only superpower left. The President of the United States is, to a great extent, the leader of the free world.
Do you think, and this applies to the local scene as well as the national, are you concerned about all of ours engagement in politics and asking the questions that you just described?
I didn't quite follow the question.
Well, the question is, I mean, are Americans engaged enough in the political process, or have we wandered off and we've lost focus?
I think we've lost focus. We don't ask the right questions. We're out there looking at small things that don't make any sense rather than focusing on the serious issues. There is, and I think that it's the candidate's fault they're not willing to address it. It's the press's fault they're not holding their feet to the fire. And it's the public's fault in the end, because we get the government we want. What we have to do is to say to each of the candidates, look, what you talk about being energy independent, what does it mean? And how are you going to do it? How are you going to get bills through Congress? How are you going to deal with our allies and enemies around the world? How are you going to deal with things that we didn't anticipate? And who's going to pay for it? And if we pay for it, what about the other things we can't have? Because you can't have everything. Which things would you cut out? Everybody wants better public schools. Okay, how are you going to improve the public schools? Not everybody agrees. How do you get a consensus? How do you get it through Congress? Once again, how do you deal with, in this case, there's teachers' unions, which are powerful. Most teachers really care, and the unions really care, but they do have their own interests that aren't necessarily the same interests as the students. After all, unions are there to represent their members, not to represent anybody else, and that's fine. But it's the government's job, representing the public, to deal with that. Crime in the streets. Crime is sadly going up around this country. Not in New York, but it is going up elsewhere. The economy is very worrisome. I don't care what anybody says. Every day there's another story. Some parts of the country are not hurt as much as others, but we are all in this ship. And when the tide goes out, we're all going to have a problem.
All right. I want to talk to you about that as it relates to New York City. Let me do that after I make some money for the company, all right?
That's a good idea. The company will be happy.
They should be, very much so. Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the phone with us this morning here on the John Gambling Show at News Talk Radio 710. You'll be and on a Friday with John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, the economy is a concern to us all. The price of gasoline is getting scary, and from what they say, it's going to get scarier. The price of gasoline has got to ultimately impact the city.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. It's doing it now. You saw the other day American Airlines cutting back. They're one of the biggest employers in Queens. The city has to buy fuel for police cars and fire engines and ambulances and garbage trucks. We buy electricity, which is directly tied to the price of oil. All of our expenses are going up, and it is very bad for the economy. And there does not seem to be an easy solution. Some of it probably is, a little bit of it anyways, is speculation. But the bottom line is, we just don't have enough fuel. As a world, we are using too much fuel, and we are producing too little. And that's not going to get better easily. It would require some real hard decisions. France and now England are trying to convert all of their electricity generation to nuclear, something that this country should do.
The Italians just announced that they've legally been prohibited, but as of today, they say they're going to change that policy.
You know, the nuclear has its problems, but everything else is worse. And in this country, because of lawmakers who are unwilling to stand up and say to the public, look, you got to make a choice, we can't seem to build any nuclear plants. And that's going to leave us vulnerable to third world dictatorships, which are controlling our life. They are the ones that are funding terrorism. They're the ones that find our our freedom so scary. And we just keep turning over to them all of our wealth. This, the big story when you write it 50 years from now of what happened at this point in our history is the whole Western world started sending all of their wealth to the third world and to some countries in particular that have publicly said they want to cause our downfall. And, you know, everybody says, I'm going to be energy independent by the year 2050. Well, you know, these elected officials aren't going to be alive in 2050, much less be in office. We have a problem now, and you can address the problem. It needs leadership on a national level. We have to have better relations with all of our allies around the world, because this is only this problem can only be solved if we all work together. That means trading with them. That means open borders. All of those things are all tied together. We have to reduce energy consumption in the United States, contact fluorescent light bulbs, hybrid cars, green roofs, more trees, better boilers and buildings. There's a whole bunch of things that we can do, and we have to fund the alternative sources of energy. Instead of complaining about, I don't want to see the windmills off the coast, we need windmills. Instead of saying, well, I don't want solar panels in the desert, we've got to invest in that kind of technology. And instead, when we pass an energy bill, we try to protect the old jobs rather than promote the new ones. And that is terrible for America's energy policy. It is terrible for America's competitiveness, and it's terrible for the American worker. If the American worker doesn't get some help from the government to be trained for the new jobs, but says to the government, oh, just keep the old jobs here, we lose. There's just no quit. You cannot stop the tides from coming in. And we are going to eventually become a country where other countries are outsourcing to us because our wages will be lower. And we don't want that. We want higher wages for our people that work in this country, but the only ways we're going to do it is if we enhance their skills through public education and training programs and promote the kind of jobs that can justify higher wages.
Now, you're a watcher of markets. The speculation, don't you think that if America stood up to today, if President Bush stood up today and laid out with bipartisan support of Congress a 10-year plan on making us energy independent, don't you think those speculators would turn this thing around in a heartbeat?
I don't know that they're going to drive oil down to $30, but it's certainly the markets don't like uncertainty. And I couldn't agree more with you. What we need is a bipartisan plan that isn't just, I'm going to give something to everybody, but requires hard choices with commitments. You know, unfortunately, we pass a law saying we'll do something, but we don't fund it. So each of these things, they sound good like we're standing up and doing something, but setting goals that are unrealistic or so far out or without any penalty if you don't achieve them, that doesn't make any sense. You can see we're becoming more dependent on coal in a world where we should become less dependent on coal, which is one of the big polluters. And the government says, or the Congress says, oh, well, technology will come along. That's like saying God will provide. God helps those who help themselves, I've always believed. And if we just sit there and say, well, there'll be a magic bullet down the road, I don't have to say to the voters, look, let's make a decision here. Do we want to be energy independent or not? If we do, you can't use that energy. You've got to raise taxes on energy so that people will use it less. You have to tax people who are putting carbon into the air rather than just have one of these cap-and-trade systems, which really don't work. And it's more of a bureaucracy and a ways to hide what you're trying to do than anything else. There's a whole bunch of really tough decisions, John, and nobody's got the courage to stand up and do it.
If you raise those taxes on energy so that you control the consumption both positively and negatively, I'm assuming that you reduce taxes on the side you want to go positive.
Well, what you do is you should raise carbon tax, for example, and put the money into job training programs and programs that help raised that help people who aren't getting paid enough, so that you create jobs with the monies that you're taking. Because yes, if you raise taxes on carbon, you're going to it's going to hurt the economy. So you want to offset that by moving the money over, and net net you'd come out way ahead.
Now, would you also believe that in conjunction with those increased energy use taxes, that you would summarily reduce income tax, for example, so that the spending level remains, the potential spending level remains pretty constant?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple of alternatives. You could reduce taxes. You could have the funds that you get from higher energy taxes go into expanding technologies that will reduce our energy consumption, or other ways. You do want to take the monies and offset the downside, which is a slower economy. And people say, well, it's going to cost us a fortune if we do some of these things. Yes, but number one, the alternative is worse, and number two, the monies you get can be going into things which will more than offset it, and net-net we'd be a big winner, as I said.
All right, things are getting awful expensive. Water rates, 14.5% go into effect July 1, and a lot of people unhappy about this. Why the big jump?
Well, the trouble is we've got to keep buying land around the reservoirs up in upstate New York so we have a water supply. We've got to keep building the water tunnel. We've got to replace an awful lot of old infrastructure. You know, if you look, the Department of Environmental Protection actually runs pretty efficiently. And almost everything, maybe everything they do, we need. So it isn't like there's a lot of extra money, or that the people that work in that business are overpaid, or that they have a big hunting lodge they all go to and say, oh, look what we're doing with the taxpayers' money. That's just not true. The monies are being well spent, and we want these services, and you got to pay for it. And in the case of water rates, a lot of it is investing in the future. If we don't make that investment today, it's going to cost us more down the road. It is painful, I recognize. Everybody recognizes that. But if we don't do it, then we'd be worse off.
Obviously so, because the city's lifeblood is its water supply.
I was last night at the Brooklyn Bridge Park, as we talked about the 125th anniversary, and you know that was the bridge was built by sandhogs. They had this casement they went in under. A lot of sandhogs actually died in digging down in the sand to get the bedrock for the two towers that hold up the bridge. And on one side, they could never reach bedrock, and they were losing so many lives, they decided to build the bridge right on the sand, because it turns out the sand moves once every million years or something, and so it's perfectly safe. But there were some members from the Sandhogs Union there, and I was chit-chatting with them. They are building this new water tunnel. They're tunneling. It's already underway for the new extension to the number 7 subway, which will open up the whole west side. They've got an awful lot of projects going. East Side Access is another one of their projects. So the Sandhogs are digging and happy. They all get they're a pretty happy group, as a matter of fact. They all have jobs, and it looks like they'll have jobs for a long time. But those are the kind of investments we have to make.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We need to make a little investment here on News Talk Radio. 8:36 is our time. My name's John Gambling. This is brand new News Talk Radio 710 WOR. And on a Friday morning, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is part of the mix here. You finally cut a deal with the police officers.
Well, that's not quite true. The arbitrators, the city arbitrator and the independent arbitrator came to an agreement which doesn't do everything we wanted, but was not something that the Patrolman Benevolent Association was willing to sign. So as far as they were concerned, it was a loss for them. I think as far as the city's concerned, it was disappointing, because everything that the police officers got, they could have gotten 3-4 years ago, and instead they've lost all this purchasing power because of inflation.
Now, is this deal done, though? I mean, does arbitration stick?
Yeah, it's been signed.
Okay.
It's done.
All right.
And it is for a period that has already expired, however. So
correct.
We don't have a contract for the current period. You know, I've always believed, John, I think this is just another example. If people sit down across the table, I always joke, put them in a room, give them a big pot of coffee, make sure the room doesn't have a bathroom, lock the door. You'd be shocked at how quickly they come to an agreement.
But the point that you make is that was for 2004-06. Now we've got 6 to 8 to deal with.
6 to 8, and we have to have a contract going forward. You know, not having union contracts going forward is terrible for everybody. The city can't plan, and the people who work for the city don't know what they're going to be making. It's just not good. And in fact, with almost every other union, we do have contracts going forward now. The city never did that before. They always used to negotiate retrospectively, but I've worked very hard with all of these unions to come up with something that is in their interest and in the city's, so that everybody knows what we're going to face coming down the road, and everybody knows what they're going to get paid coming down the road. And in this case, the union had laid out some things that they absolutely could not live with, like give backs. And in fact, they had to give all this stuff back, and it wasn't necessary. They could have done so much better. And I hope that now we can sit down and negotiate face-to-face across the table. And if you don't do it very quickly, then the whole thing's going to spiral out of control again, go back to arbitration. And the city's finances are such that we don't have a lot of money going forward. And, you know, anybody that thinks they're going to get a lot of extra just isn't being realistic. And I think these unions would be better off, and I think virtually all of them except for the PBA thought so too, better off negotiating when things were good. Now that things are starting to slow down, and we talked about the national economy, which hurts us as well, it just gets tougher to be a... It isn't that the numbers are going to be less, but it's that the ways you do it, the city has less flexibility in poor times to try to meet the needs of its workforce. And the city wants to have a well-compensated workforce where you get the best and the brightest and the hardest working and the most dedicated. And we can do that if we work together. I think we've shown that with virtually every other union. And hopefully, in this case, we'll now be able to sit down with the PBA and do that. And if we don't do that in the immediate future, then it's just going to go right back to arbitration.
Mr. Mayor, any indication the PBA has learned from this experience and will come to a 2006-2008 contract and then immediately turn around and go for the next contract, 8-10?
Well, you know, the thing is, if you were to negotiate a contract rather than do an arbitration, you can have a 4-year contract or a 6-year contract. And that's what all these other unions have done. The 2-year thing is specified in the law. The arbitration process can only deal with 2 years at a time, which really limits the flexibility of how you can come up with a good deal for the workforce. And that's what the job of the union, and also, incidentally, the job of the city. But your hands are really tied, and we talked to the arbitrator and said, look, you know, if you did a 4-year deal, we could do this and do that, and everybody would be a winner. But the arbitrator has to get the permission of both parties, and the PBA has in the past not been willing to do that. But look, John, we're not going to negotiate in public. You can't do that. But I can say this, that we stand ready to talk to the PBA, and in all fairness to Pat Lynch and his members, we do talk to them all the time, but we've got to make some progress here, and I've always been optimistic and, you know, have a good personal relationship with Pat Lynch. I just don't think that the process or the procedures that they've gone through or their approach has got them anything like what they could get if they sat across the table, and I've always believed that in everything.
The last couple of years, you and I have talked at great length about your fight and really, I mean, a fight against illegal guns in the city of New York, and you have sued a number of gun dealers to the south, a lawsuit going to court next week. The judge says Mayor Michael Bloomberg can't appear.
Well, the judge said that he didn't need a media circus, and I think in all fairness to the judge, if I were there, for better or worse, it would have been a media circus. The bottom line here is we've got to show that they sold guns illegally. We have it on film. You know, hopefully we don't lose on a technicality. If it's judged on common sense, there's no question what this dealer was doing. And we've not asked anything other than to get them to stop doing it. We've never asked for penalties. And most gun dealers that we've sued have stopped and just agreed to have a monitor to make sure they don't do it again. Society's a lot better off. They're not any the worse off. And you're starting to see some real progress here. Walmart, which is the biggest seller of arms in the country, has agreed to a whole set of procedures which will protect the public. And this is a company that, in this case, is as responsible as any company I've ever seen. It's not necessarily in their own economic interest, but it is in the interest of the society that they live in and sell to and buy from and their employees and their customers. And they really should be commended. I don't think people understand just how big a stretch it has been for them, because the NRA has really gone after them. But they've stood firm and said, look, we want to do everything we can to make sure we don't sell guns to people who, according to federal law, don't have the right to buy them. It has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It has nothing to do with your right to buy guns. States have the right to make their own individual laws. But the federal government has a law that says you've got a criminal record, you can't buy them. And yet 1% of the dealers break that law, and Walmart wants to make sure that they're not in that 1%.
All right, building down here, now that I'm downtown at 111 Broadway, the studios of WOR, I'm amazed at what's going on down here. It is insane. It's great, obviously. Merrill Lynch says they want to come down here. That's got to make you happy.
Well, Merrill Lynch is already down there, remember. They're in the World Financial Center. They're talking about moving across the street into one of the buildings on the actual World Trade Center site. It's important for them to stay down there, or you know, other people to come down. You know, for all the delays, it is so complex to get everybody going. But in all fairness to Pataki, Spitzer, and Patterson, from the state's point of view, maybe in retrospect they could have done it a little quicker, but I'm not even sure of that. All I care about is that it's now going. The Deutsche Bank building is being remediated and then will continue to come down. That should be down by early next year. We're doing as fast as we can, and don't, you know, everybody yells about deadlines. I can just tell you they're working hard, and we have lots of laws to comply with. We're doing that. And J.P. Morgan and Chase said they're going to build there. Silverstein, you know, everybody was yelling and screaming with him, and he was yelling and screaming with the insurance companies. But the bottom line is the Port Authority did finish the Easton bathtub, and Silverstein is starting to build two new buildings there. Says he'll build the third, number two, which is the number two building, as soon as they turn it over to him in another 6 months. The Freedom Tower is now up to ground level and going up. The only thing that's a problem in that area really is the Calatrava terminal, which is phenomenal design, but nobody knows how they're going to fund it. But other than that, everything is chugging along downtown. The streets, which we've been ripping up to do more infrastructure, it's inconvenient as hell, but we're going to, down the road, when all this is done, we'll be great beneficiaries, and we'll look back and have forgotten the pain.
All right, there are a lot of street vendors down here. Controversy over the fines and the way they're being enforced in New York City. Are they being too sensitive? I mean, or is this the way it is?
The administration doesn't make the law. You know, if the city council passes a law, we're going to follow it. And everybody says, well, you know, you shouldn't follow it, then tell them to change the law. When it comes to a regulation that we put in, I hope we aren't too dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But, you know, you have to, if you don't do that, then people say, well, you're not being fair. There was one vendor, he was cited for a whole bunch of health things. Now, supposing somebody got really sick from eating his food, can you imagine the outcry of why didn't you enforce the law? You know, you've got to comply with the health laws. That's it. Next.
School spending and Albany's control. I was just talking to Chancellor Klein here about an hour or so ago. We got into it a little bit. Your point of view?
Well, the city's policy is we want to fund all schools equally. Now, what does that mean? It does include variations for English language learners, for special ed, for high needs kids. We have that built in. But for example, when we give some extra money to a school for high needs kids, we give the same extra money per capita to all schools that have high need kids. So we're trying to keep it as even as possible. And we have some kids in our school system who can't read and write, and they need a lot of help, and they have emotional problems, and they need a lot of help, and they have physical problems, and they need a lot of help. And the city should put, the taxpayer should reach into their pocket and do that. But at the same time, we have kids who will be the Nobel Prize winners of the future, and they need help too. It's at a different level. We're teaching them calculus rather than reading and writing, but we need money for the good schools and the bad schools, and the only fair thing to do is to give all schools the same per capita. And we do that, and it was never done before. Now, the Albany legislature comes along and gives us some more money. That's great. But they pick a handful of schools that they want to favor for, I don't know why, you'll have to ask them, and they won't let us take their money and spread it evenly across. And so what's happened is that some schools are now starting to get more per capita than others, and I don't think that that's fair. You say, why doesn't the city just move some of its money from the schools where Albany gives money and move it to the schools where Albany doesn't? Because Albany's passed a law saying we can't do that. And so no matter how much money Klein has, this inequality has been created by Albany, and it's just wrong. And we've said, you know, that just...
Albany says it's your fault because of the budget cuts.
The budget cuts, number one, we didn't cut the school budget. This is a game that they play. Government finance is so fascinating, John. You know, if you get paid, let's say, $40,000 a year, and your expenses go up, your income stays at $40,000. They would say your income went down because your buying power went down. Well, that's true, but there are two different things. In the case of schools, we've put in $10.5 billion more into the school. We put in, I think, 75% or number 79% more money into the school system of city taxpayer dollars in the last 6 years. The state's only raised the state contribution by about 55%, and I think we put about $10.5 billion, and they put about $8.5 billion. So they're just factually wrong. We put in a lot more money than they did. This year we even raised the amount of money for all of the problems that we have in terms of balancing our budget. And they don't seem to worry about balancing theirs, but we have to balance ours. We raised by $130 million. When they say it's a cut from what somebody asked for. Only in government, only Albany could think that way. If you asked me to have your salary go from $40,000 to $50,000, okay, which would be a 25% increase, and I only raised it from $40,000 to $45,000, you'd say, oh, I got a 12.5% cut. that's exactly what they're doing here. We didn't cut anybody. We've raised everybody. The state has come and raised some schools a lot more, and I think that that's not good, and it's not fair to everybody, and it's not good public policy, and we should get all we were asking for them. We love the money. We want to say thank you, but let us run the school system and split it fairly across. Albany should not be making decisions at the local level of which schools get more and less money. That's not their job.
You and I argue about that all the time. I mean, we agree that Albany controls things that they shouldn't, such as those red light cameras and the like. Mr. Mayor, I need to take a break. I've got some folks hanging on the line here at 800-321-0710 that have a question for you. Mr. Mayor, I've got a bunch of folks that want to talk with you. What do you say we start with Gail in Manhattan? Hello, Gail.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Yes, I would like to know, as of this date, the status of saving New York City Off-Track Betting Corporation.
Mr. Mayor?
I couldn't hear a word she said.
Oh, you couldn't. Very interesting. All right. Well, she was asking about OTB.
Ah, OTB.
And saving it.
We have to save OTB, but it's up to the state. What's happened here is OTB is run by 1,500 smart, hardworking, dedicated people. And who like their jobs, incidentally, so there's a jobs issue here. It is patronized by a bunch of people who want to bet on the ponies. Why, I don't know, but if that's what you want to do, nothing wrong with that. And it was designed to make money for the city and then a little bit for the state. In fact, what's happened is the state's come along and said that OTB should take its profits and subsidize the racing industry. And to make it even worse, they want to take 110% of its profits to subsidize the racing industry. So the bottom line is the city is about to go into a situation here where we've got to subsidize a bookie operation. We're not only not getting anything from it, we're actually paying to keep it going. And I've said, look, we have schools to run. We have police and firefighters and sanitation workers and correction workers to pay. We have lots of services. We want to help people who really need help in this city. Subsidizing a bookie operation, we just aren't going to do. and we said that to the state, and they've got to come up with some ways where the amount of money, if they're going to take anything for the racing industry, it can't be 100% of our profits. And so rather than have it be a percentage of the gross, if you make it a percentage of the net, that would solve the problem. Then we can argue about the percentage. But it's up to the state. We have a legal obligation, if you're going to close it down, to give notice. We've sent out those notices. There's a series of notices you've got to send to the employees that they're going to be unemployed. It would be very sad for the people who work for OTB if they lose their jobs. It would be sad for the racing industry. They're not going to have any revenue. It would be very sad for this city, because we should be able to get some money out of this to pay our teachers and firefighters and police officers. Instead, it's up to Albany now.
All right, Mr. Mayor, only a couple of minutes.
But incidentally, John, if they think we're kidding, we are sending out the notices. We will close it down. We're not going to subsidize it.
All right, we're having a problem with our telephones. We apologize to those on the line here, but let me pass along the question from Bob in Brooklyn. Property tax reductions for small homeowners. Any hope?
Absolutely. That's what the property tax rebate is all about. When we needed more money to pay our employees, we raised property taxes, but we tried to raise them so that the people who are in the real estate business, who've been benefiting from higher prices, pay the taxes, and the people who are living in their houses, who really don't get any benefit from higher prices for their houses because they still have to live in some place, they pay less or don't pay anything. And that was the only ways we could do it was to raise everybody's the same amount, because that's a state law, and then get the state to let us send the $400 rebate. We'll continue that rebate. It doesn't wipe out all of the problems for a small homeowner, but it gets rid of a big chunk of that increase. Keep in mind, as your value of your house goes up, your assessment goes up, and so your property taxes go up in spite of all of that.
All right, and Victoria from Staten Island wanted to know about recruiting problems for the NYPD on Staten Island. I've got less than a minute.
Well, there's recruiting problems for police departments across the country. Everybody's having a similar problem, or most. It doesn't help us that our rookie police officers aren't getting paid as much as we would like. We wanted the arbitrator to let us pay them more, but we couldn't get there. But we did make a big difference from $25,000 to $35,000, roughly. And it's the best police department in the world. If you want to be a police officer and be part of the best, the NYPD, and down the road you'll make a decent living, and it's just the most satisfying job in the world. You make a real difference.
And, of course, the new contract actually gives rookies a little bit more money,
yeah,
which is helpful.
Yeah, 25 to 35, which is helpful. Won't solve all the problems. Commissioner wanted more, and I agree with him, but we didn't get it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, it's a long weekend, lots to do. The beaches are open, and we will catch up with you next Friday.
Beaches are open. Don't drink and drive, and don't go in the water when there aren't lifeguards, John.
All right.
We don't have to talk about it next week.
Make sure you wear your water wings.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling right here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. That's it for this week. By taking money.